Okay, last week we saw that Ezra had, the king Artaxerxes had given Ezra permission to go back to Jerusalem. That would be the second return. That was going to be about, I believe, 457 B.C. 536 was when the first return was made. So we see there's been a number of years. Also, as we went through this study, something else we need to be concerned about, or at least remember, is all of the different decrees. We talked about that last week, the decrees that were made by Cyrus, the first decree, Darius, we had a copy of his decree when the guy, what, Tatanaya, whoever, saw them building and wrote to Darius. Did he know what was happening with the things going on in Jerusalem? And Tatanaya comes back, Darius comes back and says, you leave these guys alone. I did a search, and sure enough, King Cyrus gave a decree to do just exactly what they're doing. And by the way, you need to support them. King Cyrus had said the support would be given from the taxes that would be collected. I mean, when you think about it, that's pretty good for the government to be helping with the rebuilding of the temple, the rebuilding of the wall, providing sacrifices for the different sacrifices. This is the government that was doing this. And what a blessing that would be. It should be to the Israelites. They should realize it's a blessing. And then we saw last week that Ezra, Artaxerxes, gives him another decree to go back with more things. We talked about the gold and the silver and the collection. It was a lot of money. And one interesting thing last week, did Ezra want to have an army going back with him? No, because he had told the king just how good God was and how God would support them and how God would protect them. And, you know, he was afraid. He thought, well, if I go to the king and ask for some of the army to go with me, that's going to show the king that I don't have much respect in my God, that my God's going to protect me. And, of course, it was interesting last week. We got down and over in chapter 7. Basically, Artaxerxes says, if anybody around Jerusalem messes with these Israelites, they're going to be hung, they're going to be killed, all their possessions will be taken. And also we saw in the first few chapters there that when they went back the first time, we see that all the people, maybe not all the people, but a lot of the people tried to hinder them in the building of the temple. And we saw also from about 536 B.C. to 520, it more or less, they got the foundation laid and it more or less stopped, you know. And then God raised up Haggai and Zechariah, and they went. We read over there about how the people started turning away from God, maybe not worshiping idols, but they was taking care of their own personal possessions. And God told them that your harvest hasn't been as good as it's been in the past because you haven't been serving me. So God understands those things. And God can interfere, I mean, maybe not interfere, but God can control the rain and the crops and the country you live in and the prosperity or the if there's a famine. God, just as he did back at that time, he does the same thing today. Now today, I think it's hard to understand. Is this event caused by God or whatever? But God controls the affairs of men. We always need to realize that. But in the last part of the last verse of chapter 8, do I sound kind of loud? Okay. In verse 20, 36 of chapter 8, it says, and they delivered the king's commissions unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors on this side of the river, and they furthered the people in the house of God. So this was a royal decree. It was serious. And we see here that through the government that they are supporting those things there in Jerusalem, which should be a blessing. Okay, down in chapter 9, David, read verses 1 through 4. So Ezra's going to get back to Jerusalem. Also, not only was Ezra a priest there, but Artaxerxes has put him in charge of he's the governor. He's put him in charge of the civil things of what's going to go on. He's been blessed to be in a powerful position. But he gets there, and problem comes up. David, you want to read verses 1 to 4? Okay, what's going on here? He gets back to Jerusalem, and you know, he's just come from wherever he comes from the capital there, wherever Artaxerxes at. So he gets there, he's been there for a while, and what's the problem that people bring to him? I'm sorry. Intermarriage. If we go back to chapter 7, verse 6, it says, this Ezra went up from Babylon. He was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord, the God of Israel, had given, and the king granted him all his requests. So anyway, we see that he's, talks with verse 6 there, he's a ready scribe in the law of Moses. Had the law of Moses discussed this issue? Go over to Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter. You know, Deuteronomy is that book that before the children of Israel goes into the Canaan land, that Moses, this is like Moses' last will and testament, right? Because Moses is not going to get to go into the land of Canaan because of what he had done, and God was clear with him of what he had done and why he could not go into the land of Canaan. But there in this book wasn't written when the first year they went to the wilderness, but it was there before he tells the children of Israel because he's concerned about them. They've just been wandering for 40 years. That was not God's intention. It was because of the evil report 10 of the 12 scribes brought back. But the spies had brought back. But look at verse 1 of chapter 7, Deuteronomy. When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land, whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughters thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall ye deal with them. Ye shall destroy their altars, break down their images, and cut down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. Verse 6, for thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Is it pretty clear? When this instruction was given to the children of Israel as they go into the land of Canaan. Now, was it they was not supposed to marry these people of these nations? Was this a racial thing? Did it have anything to do with race or racism? No, spiritual thing. And what did he say? What would happen? They would turn to false gods. Okay, the Canaanite nations, you go back and you can read some of the things that they did was very sinful in the worship of the different altars. And what did he build close to the temple there? He built temples. It tells us over there. He built temples to other gods. Some of the gods that his wife was. So here, you know, he was a great builder. And he was the one that built the temple to the holy God. But he also built temples for idols that some of his wives worshipped. That's just hard to believe. And if they did serve other gods, if they did worship other gods they should not worship, Moses tells them what's going to happen to them. Okay. Anger God. They'll be overthrown. Now, huh? They wouldn't be holy again. Now, this Moses tells this before they go into the land of Canaan, and I think that's around 1400 B.C. I'm not for sure, but I think it's 1300 B.C. When Ezra goes back, it's 457 B.C., 1,000 years. Now, when Ezra goes back, hindsight's always 20/20, isn't it? So when he, because he's a scribe, he's a scribe of the law of Moses, so he would know what God had said back in Deuteronomy, wouldn't he not? And so he could understand, he would know their history. He would know about the judges, right? He would know about the kings of the United Kingdom, and he'd know about the kings of the divided kingdom. And then also, he knows he's in Babylon for one reason. Why is that? Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed the city because they was worshiping other idols, and they became wicked. They became as wicked as those nations that God cast out of the land of Canaan, okay? So he knows that, and he knows that the Israelites did it once, and what's going to happen if they do it again? God's going to come again. Yeah. This is, now, don't you think there would be other Israelites in Judah, in Jerusalem, that might know about this? If they studied the law and they studied the prophets, it's there, it's plain, isn't it? Yeah.
For whatever reason, their influence wasn't great enough to stem
it. That's right. And who is involved on this? What's the some of the groups of people?
The priests and the foremen.
Yes, and the Levites and the and it says the rulers. You know, if a ruler, is it hard to confront a ruler about something that they're doing in their life that's not right? Depending on what kind of ruler they are, right? I mean, can you think approaching some of our politicians about something they're doing wrong, and what might, or even in another country? You know, that poor guy that went over to the consulate in Turkey, he's gone. I mean, that was pretty ruthless to do whatever happened to him. He went in that day hoping he'd be probably home for supper that night, and he didn't come out. Okay? There are some pretty bad places in this world of what happens to other people. So
it's hard to fight
city hall. Okay, Dale, what's the reaction? What's the reaction of Ezra? Did Ezra just say, well, you know, I should have told these people, and you know, so what? You know, they're gonna do what they want to? What's his reaction?
I think it sums it up really well when he says in verse 3 and verse 4, it says he sat down appalled. Mm-hmm. We don't use that word very much.
No. King James says astonished or appalled or astonished.
He's just completely
flabbergasted, I guess you could say.
Appalled.
Yeah. And what does he do physically to himself? Well, first of all, good thing comes up, how long was his hair? You know, he can't have too short hair. But anyway, he pulls his hair out. I mean, that would hurt, wouldn't it? Don't you think you have to be upset about a condition? But he knows exactly from God's law what's going to happen to the Israelites in Jerusalem, that they're going to end up going back into captivity. Okay, also, he rents his garment. That's just a custom that the Jews did. They would sometimes rip their clothes because of the grief that they're in and those type of things. And then it said about in verse 4, everyone were assembled unto me, everyone that trembled at the words of God of Israel. Do we tremble at the words of God?
We should.
Because we know what the power that God has and what he can do. And then it says, verse 4, he sat astonished until the evening sacrifice. I guess somewhere this was in the morning, but I don't know if it said that or not. But anyway, he sat astonished to the evening sacrifice. Okay. Kim, you want to read down through verse 9 for us? Verse 5. Okay, so in verse 5 it talks, he falls down, he fell upon his hands and his knees, he spread out his hands. As we told, he's astonished, he's appalled. And in verse 6, what does he say? Is this not a prayer that he's doing here? He's approaching God. And what's in verse 6, how does he feel about this? He's in shame, he's ashamed. He's embarrassed. Even to lift his face up to God. And it goes on. As he goes on here, he talks about their trespasses that has exceeded their head. Those trespasses are serious. And in verse 7, does he know their history? We have been in great trespass until this day. You know, they had kings at one time, didn't they? Didn't they have self-rule back until 586? Well, really probably before that, when Nebuchadnezzar came in, he appointed the king, you know, what was it, 606 B.C. or something like that. But for that time, they had a king, but it was a puppet king because Nebuchadnezzar chose who he wanted to be king and who he didn't want to be king. But at one time, they had, we might say, home rule. They ruled their own affairs. Talks about the iniquities, our kings, our priests. Our kings have been delivered up, the sword, to captivity. The Jerusalem was totally, all the vessels of the temple was taken by Nebuchadnezzar. It was completely spoiled. The gold was taken off the walls of the temple. Everything was gone. And then in verse 8, he talks about a little grace. What's this grace here? What had God done for them? Yeah. Talks about a remnant to escape. I mean, they didn't like run away from Babylon or from, you know, they had a royal decree to go back, but they escaped that captivity. They left being under they was under the rule of the Babylonians, and now they're under the rules of the Medes and Persians. And at least a remnant, a small group, got to go back. And even though they were subject to the Persian kings, they still kind of, they had to pay their taxes, but they still kind of controlled things there in Jerusalem and have given us a little reviving in our bondage. They're still in bondage. First, we were bondsmen, yet God, in verse 9, did not forsake them. No matter what the situation was, is God always there? Yeah. In fact, Jeremiah, we've said this before too, Jeremiah prophesies that when you go to Babylon, you're going to be there 70 years. You're going to be there a long time. So get to work over there. Don't be down over there. Have marriages. Marry. Be successful in business. Do those things because you're not going to come back very shortly. You know, in Jeremiah, after the first ones were taken off, there was an evil prophet that said Daniel's group, that when Daniel was taken, that in 2 or 3 years, those people will be brought back. That was a false prophet. And Jeremiah says, don't listen to that guy. They liked listening to that guy because he was saying, in 2 years, 3 years, we're all going to be back together again. Everything will be happy. And Jeremiah says, it ain't true. It ain't going to happen. An extended mercy about the kings of Persia. Do you think Ezra prayed for the king Artaxerxes? You think he prayed for Artaxerxes? Yeah. The people there in Jerusalem ought to be praying for the kings too. You know, should we pray for our leaders? Yeah. And we talked last week about the greatest thing a nation can have is peace and prosperity. That's the greatest thing a nation can have of its leaders, not to be in war, not to be in poverty or depression and those type of things. And we should be thankful for those type of things. And also he says he's thankful to repair the desolations and to give us a wall in Judah and Jerusalem. The wall's not built at this time. We mentioned last week, the wall is still destroyed. When Ezra and his group came to Jerusalem, they still saw the ruins. They still saw the stones, the mess around the wall where it was at. The temple had been restored, but there still was a lot of work to do. Okay, anything before we go on here? Hey, Bill, you want to read from verse 10 to the end of the chapter? Okay, in verse 10, what does Ezra say? What does he pray to God?
What can you say?
What can we say? Ezra's putting himself in with the rest of the people. When we go over to Nehemiah, we're going to see that Nehemiah is going to have a prayer. And in fact, when Nehemiah's in the presence of Artaxerxes, he's going to also include him with the Israelites that sinned. But he says, we have forsaken thy commandments. And he also refers back the prophets. Remember, God has sent Haggai and Zechariah in 520 B.C. to tell the children of Israel there in Jerusalem, get this temple done. You haven't done anything in 16 years. Get this thing done. God has always sent prophets to his people. Go back to the kings, the divided kingdom. You know, Nathan the prophet went to David with David's sin, okay? Samuel, God would always have someone to tell his people what they should be doing. You know, it talks, the land of verse 11 was an unclean land, the filthiness of the people. He's reminding them what the condition was in Canaan before they went there. And also about not giving your daughters and your sons in verse 12. It's interesting, in verse 12 he says, seek their peace or their wealth. When you've got other nations around you, like when they're in Jerusalem there and they had those other nations around them, would it not be a temptation to seek peace at any cost and to become associated with those people to gain wealth? You know, we're going to see this when we get to Nehemiah. Nehemiah comes back, and on the Sabbath day, the ones that would bring their fish from the coast, they would be outside the walls of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. They was trading on the Sabbath day with the Jews. Nehemiah closes the doors to the city, and he tells the people, get out of here, go back. The Sabbath day is not a day of trading, okay? But they would want to seek their peace, maybe, or maybe want to compromise with them about different things. But he says, be strong. And verse 13, he tells them again, look around the city here. The walls are still fallen. This is because we have sinned. Our fathers have sinned. Let's not this same thing happen to us that happened to our people before us. Verse 14, about breaking the commandments, about God being angry. And in verse 15, he realizes that God is righteous, for we remain yet escaped as it is this day. Behold, we are before thee in our trespasses, for we cannot stand before thee with our trespasses. So, as David had said before, there was people in Jerusalem that brought this to Ezra. And maybe these people had brought this to some of the rulers and they didn't get too far with it. But Ezra's a new guy on the block, okay? He's been sent with this decree. He's the civil ruler. He's the authority now in Jerusalem. And they're going to take this concern to Ezra. Okay. Zach, why don't you read chapter 10 down to verse 8 for us?
While Ezra himself was in the congregation,
So Ezra gets up from his prayer here in chapter 9. We see in verse 1 of chapter 10, he was weeping, casting down. He gets himself up. And who comes to him? After he's been praying here in the evening sacrifice, who comes to him? A few people or a large group? Okay, so that means there was people there that knew what should be going on and what should not be going on. A very large congregation of men and women and children, for the people wept very sore. And then we see this guy in verse 2, realizes we have trespassed against our God. We've taken strange wives of the people of the land. Yet now there is hope in Israel concerning this thing. Even though they have done wrong, there's hope if they do the right thing. And what's in verse 3? What's his solution? Got to make a covenant to put away all the wives and those that are born of them according to the counsel of my Lord and to those that tremble at God's commandments, and let it be according to the law. And says, be of good courage. Do it. You know, sometimes if you've got to do something you don't want to do, somebody will say, well, be of good courage, go do it. You know what you're supposed to do, so strengthen yourself and do it. And in verse 5, what does he make he arises, and what does his chief priest and the Levites and all of Israel do? They took an oath, and they swore the oath. Okay? And then Ezra goes to the house of God, and what does he do? He fasted, didn't he? And the Jews would fast sometimes in times of great mourning, of national emergencies, trying to plead to God, they would fast. And they made a proclamation, verse 7. Now, what was that proclamation? All the Israelites would come together. Now, one thing to think about it is when they go back and there was a census taken in 536 when the first group went back, and there was about 45,000 total Israelites, okay? And so that was in 536. This is now 457. So we have to take 43 and 36. So it's about 79 years from when that first group came back. I wonder how many Israelites were there. And I meant to do that the other day. If it had been a 4% population growth, I meant to do it on my calculator. That would be 1.04 to the 79th power, okay? Because it compounds itself. But if you just take 4 times 79, times 80, so that's easy, 80, that's 3.2. So if you didn't even compound it, you take 45,000 times 3.2, that would be about 150,000. So I don't know, and I don't know what the conditions were about the death rate, about the birth rate, and all that kind of stuff. But what I point out is a lot of people, wasn't it? Just the normal growth would be a lot of people. And the decision is made to come to Jerusalem, and how much notice are they given?
3 days.
Now, you know, the Israelites didn't like live 200 miles away from Jerusalem, okay? They're still pretty contained in Jerusalem. In fact, we'll see over in Nehemiah causes at least 10. Jerusalem wasn't inhabited enough in Nehemiah's time. So what he did, he said, okay, 10% of the people living outside of Jerusalem, 10% of them has to come to Jerusalem. That was because he was the lead, he was the civil authority there. So he just said, 10% of you guys has to come live in Jerusalem. But anyway, they have to come in 3 days according to the council of the princes and the elders. Now, if you don't come, what's going to happen? Is there consequences?
Yes. You forfeit really all your financial holdings.
All your substance, okay? all your livestock, all your grain, all your possessions. If you don't come, it's all going to be confiscated, and you'll be separated from the congregation of those that had been carried away. So there was a problem, and Ezra's going to solve, or at least get the community together, all the Israelites together, and is going to solve that. Okay, Erica, why don't you read verses 9 down through 14. Okay, all the people, they have this summons. They get a decree, okay? However it's published through the written or through people just going out and telling them verbally, they've got 3 days. They don't have much time to get there. They have 3 days, and a lot of people come together. And what time of year is it? It says the ninth month. What time of year is the ninth month in their calendar? Be the fall. And what they're outside. And sometimes in the fall, what does it do sometimes? We know about that, don't we? Okay, we know about that. And so they're assembled outside, and it's a great rain, and they're trembling because of this matter. They probably are trembling maybe for two different reasons. Trembling before the seriousness of this and what God would want them to do, and they could be trembling too, but because they're wet and they're cold. You know, we don't know. But I think it's a combination of both. Okay, and then Ezra says, make confession of this, and separate yourself. And I think it's interesting, it says the strange wives. There's two times in verse 10, and we might talk about that a little bit more next week. In verse 10, it mentioned strange wives. In verse 11, mentioned strange wives again. And they say, that's what we should do, we're going to do. Now, while they're assembled here, and it's a great number of people, I would think, because we just mentioned, there had to be some kind of population growth. And so, are they going to settle this afternoon? I don't think they can settle that this afternoon. And because they say in verse 13, there's a lot of rain. It must be raining pretty heavy, okay? There's a lot of rain. We're uncomfortable. We're cold. And they say this work won't take place in 1 day or 2 days because of the number of marriages there are. We can't do this in 1 or 2 days. And there's also in verse 13, it says, for we are many that have transgressed this thing. So what's the solution of verse 14? What do they come up with? They're going to have a schedule to those that had married strange wives to come before the rulers in our cities, come at an appointed time, and with them the elders of every city and the judges thereof, until the fierce wrath of our God for this matter be turned from us. So, if you've lived in Jerusalem, and there's other Israelites that live 5 or 10 miles away, are you going to be able to know about their marriage if you're in Jerusalem and you don't interact with those individuals in another village? But what about the village would have leaders, they would have elders, they would have people that have interacted with these other Israelites, would they not come too? So to make sure that if this couple here, this man, this wife, this man's married, she's an idolater, she has been worshiping idols of those old nations, and that is wrong. And so I think that the judges and the elders are coming to be a witness. Could someone be charged and it not be true? That's right. It could be someone could level a charge that would not be true. And so you want to be careful that someone doesn't level a charge that's not true, but also you want to make sure that if the charge is true, that it is true and something needs to be done. Okay. But anyway, verse 17, it says, "And they made an end with all the men that had taken strange wives by the first day of the first month." Okay, when they come together in verse 9, it was the ninth month on the 20th day of the month, okay? So then it says in verse 17, it's all taken care of by the first day of the first month. And the Israelites would have had 12 months of 30 days each. So that would be about in 70 days, being the ninth month. What is it? It's the ninth month. It'd be the 10th, 11th, 12th. Well, it'd be 90 days. So about 100 days. The process is these men would come and women would come, and they would, with the judges, and they would go through this. Now, we're not going to take the time to read verses 18, but it lists the ones that came, the sons. In verse 44, the last verse of the chapter, it says, "All these had taken strange wives, and some of them had wives by whom they had children." Now, I did not take the time to add all of those up. But one of the commentators, I guess we could take the time to add, it was it's either 112 or 122. Now, for next week, I want you all to look at, let's see a question here. I'm going to put something out here. When the Israelites went into the land of Canaan, they came to Jericho, right? Who did they meet at Jericho that really helped them out? What was their occupation? Okay. Also, when Peter, was she a Canaanite? Go over and read in Judges. Read in Judges when she has a discourse with those two spies. What she tells those spies that she had heard about 40 years ago. Also, is she mentioned in Hebrews? Like the 11th chapter. And what does the Hebrew writer talk about? What he commends her for? That's right. What is the writer of Hebrews, what does he commend Rahab for?
Her
faithfulness. And next week, we're going to go through some places in the book of Leviticus talking about the stranger that would sojourn among you. Be thinking about this. And Austin's right. Who's another woman that was of the tribe of Moab, of the nation of Moab? Ruth. Go back and read that and see what Ruth tells Naomi. Remember when Naomi tells her to go back to your home? What do I, we're widows. We have no ways. What does Ruth tell Naomi? Wherever you go, I will go. Whoever your people are, it's my people. So let's think about that next week when we come back.